Profiles in Cinemania, Bela Lugosi. Listen to them, the children of the night. What music they make. Ever since he descended a staircase and announced, "I am Dracula," in 1931, there has only ever been one actor the world thinks of when they think of Bram Stoker's infamous vampire. Whether they know it or not, that actor is Bela Lugosi. Born as Bela Fenric Desiro Blasco, wow, that's a mouthful, on October 20th, 1882, he changed his name to Bela Lugosi when he moved to America. And for the purposes of this profile, and because I suck at pronouncing Hungarian, we'll just stick with the name the world knows best. Lugosi began his career in 1902 acting on the Hungarian stage, where he played in 172 productions over 15 years. This averages out to be more than 11 shows per year, all of which required memorizing scripts and blocking, as well as long hours of rehearsal. Anyone who says acting isn't hard work can fuck right off. You also have to subtract a couple years between 1914 and 1916 when Lugosi was busy getting some trigger time on the Russian front and a little thing I like to call World War I. After getting wounded and mustering out of the Austro-Hungarian army in 1917, Lugosi moved on to appear in silent films under the name of Aristid Olt. In short order, he became a matinee idol in his native Hungary. The 1918 armistice saw the dissolution of Austria-Hungary, and the following year, the rump state of Hungary saw the communist revolution that established the Hungarian Soviet Republic. Lugosi, seizing the opportunity for himself and his fellow actors, went straight for the throat. He organized the National Trade Union of Actors, the first film actors union anywhere in the world. Unfortunately, fascist reactionaries managed a counter-revolution 133 days later, and after seizing the levers of power, they began purging Hungary of anyone they considered a socialist. This naturally meant union organizers like Lugosi, and fascists being fascists, Jews as well. Lugosi fled Hungary for Germany, separating from his first wife, Ilona Schmink, in the process. The Weimar Republic had a thriving film industry in the 1920s, and Lugosi acted in several films there, but didn't stay long. He'd become adept at reading winds of change, and as the storm clouds of fascism began to gather over Germany, he hopped ship and made his way to New Orleans. Now, it was only a jump north from the Big Easy to the Big Apple, where he passed through Ellis Island and into the arms of Lady Liberty. Bela's big break came in 1927 when he got the part of Dracula in a Broadway adaptation of Bram Stoker's novel. The play became a hit, and it was due to Lugosi's take on Dracula. 6'1" with a slim athletic build, a mystifying presence, and an alluring accent, Lugosi might not have closely matched the monster Bram Stoker had written, but he was dashing, debonair, and oozed sex appeal. His performance was so iconic that it established what we still imagine when we hear the word vampire. Almost 100 years later, he might not have had personally created the kink of monster fucking, but he at least brought it into enough prominence that the Twilight series of novels made it to the bestseller. Oh, I can't even say the name without, I can't get the taste out of my mouth. Oh God, I think I'm gonna be sick. Dracula had taken the country by storm. This drew the attention of Universal Pictures, who began developing a film adaptation of the hit play. Hollywood being Hollywood and time being a flat circle, Lugosi was not Universal Pictures' first choice for the role of Dracula, despite his critically acclaimed performance on stage as Dracula. He only played in one movie. What's that you say? Lugosi was a film star in Europe? He'd been in loads of pictures across Hungary and Germany? Well, this is America, bub, and that shit don't fly. Stakes were high for this piece. Lugosi wasn't even second choice. No, not third either. Universal put just about every leading man they could find in a cape and a coffin. Paul Muni, Chester Morris, Ian Keith, John Ray, Joseph Schafkop, Arthur Edmund Carey, William Conrad, Conrad Viet, and even John fucking Carradine before they'd settled on Lou Ayres. Ayres had played Eric Maria Remarque's self-insert character in 1930s film adaptation of the classic World War I novel, all quiet on the Western Front. This last pick must have chafed quite severely, seeing how Lugosi actually served in World War I while Ayres was still whining after his mom for another Ovaltine. Thankfully for history, Ayres washed out, only to be replaced by Robert Ames, who was himself replaced by David Manners before Universal swapped Manners into the role of Jonathan Harker and finally cast Lugosi in the role for which he had been born. Again, because Hollywood never changes, they also only paid him $3,500, a pittance even by the standards of the time, because he'd been so eager to accept the role that he loved so much. The fact that Universal had paid him so anemically was a pain in the neck for him throughout the rest of his fucking life. Did I mention Hollywood never changes? Yeah, well, it doesn't. Dracula may have been a smash hit, but its success locked Bela Lugosi into a lifetime of typecasting as Hollywood's King of Terror. Try as he might to break into other genres, Lugosi was stuck playing in the horror movies, usually as some manner of Dracula-esque man-monster and often cast beside the other most typecast man in Hollywood, Boris Karloff, best known for his role as Frankenstein's Monster Man. Throughout the 1930s, Lugosi made The Island of Lost Souls, The Black Cat, The Raven, The Invisible Ray, Son of Frankenstein, and Black Friday. The fact that Universal had shortchanged Lugosi would come back to bite them. Lugosi's history as a labor organizer, specifically an actors' union organizer, came in handy in 1933 when he helped to organize the Screen Actors Guild as one of its charter members. For 91 years now and counting, SAG, now SAG-AFTRA, have been the major force keeping studios from screwing over their stars, and has kept mid- and low-level actors from starving to death thanks to their royalties clauses and their health care plan. Lugosi had become one of the biggest names in American entertainment, and used the platform he'd built by playing bad guys on film to play the good guy in real life. As first Germany and then the rest of Europe fell to fascism, Lugosi stridently urged the American government to put a stop to it. He had seen the results of fascist purges firsthand, so he became one of the few public voices speaking up for Jewish refugees and demanding the immigration admit more of them. This earned him the enmity of the American fascists, but the Nazis got theirs in the end, so fuck them. Unfortunately, it was the late 30s that Lugosi went into decline. Thanks to the injuries he suffered in the First World War, his doctors had begun prescribing him opioids, which resulted in him developing a substance use disorder. This got so bad that he began losing work, especially on A-list pictures. The last of these, 1948's Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, had him more or less as just a cameo. Lugosi was able to make ends meet by playing in theatrical productions and B-movies, as well as the new medium of television. However, his addiction began to dominate his life. He began to become confused, and casting directors started passing him by. He took roles for live events promoting other films, usually dressed as Dracula, and on at least one occasion did so while holding the leash of another man dressed in a gorilla costume. What the fuck was that about? Not gonna kink shame. When he went to rehab in 1953, other celebrities came to his aid, including Frank Sinatra. It was while working in the B pictures that he met filmmaker Edward D. Wood Jr. This relationship was humorized in the Tim Burton film Ed Wood, but in reality, Lugosi's family and close friends considered it exploitative. He played in Wood's Glen or Glenda and Bride of the Monster, and shortly before his death in 1956, recorded some footage that appeared in 1957's Plan 9 from Outer Space, which is widely regarded as the worst film of all time. At the time of his death, Lugosi was found holding a script called The Final Curtain, and at his funeral, he was buried in his Dracula costume. Boris Karloff was heard to say, "Bella, stop fooling around and get up." Bela Lugosi was married a grand total of 5 times and became a father late in life with his 4th wife, Lillian Arch. His family life, much like his professional life, was frankly tragic, so we've opted to leave most of it out. However, it is worth noting that Lugosi's son, Bela G. Lugosi went on to become an influential entertainment attorney credited with creating the California Celebrities Rights Act of 1985. This landmark law allowed actors' personality rights to survive after their death, which means that if you squint at it the right way, the actor best known for playing Dracula could be described as having actually achieved immortality, of a very humdrum legalistic kind. Thanks to Lugosi Jr.'s legal wizardry, certain, possibly mouse-related, entertainment conglomerates can only engage in digital necromancy if they pay for it. One can only hope they have to pay in blood. This has been another Profile in Cinemania. This episode was written by Zachariah Burks and Ethan Ireland, and was performed by Zachariah Burks. Hey, that's me. Music by Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Profiles in Cinemania is a product of the Cinemania Society, LLC.